Hello and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito, and we're here with episode 430 and my conversation with freelancing percussionist, arranger, and educator, Etiko Daimo. We'll get to her shortly. But first up, how's everybody doing? There's a lot going on right now, not just in your employment and studies and families, but really all over the world. It's been a ridiculous whirlwind, and I really hope you are taking care of yourselves and each other and finding ways to stay connected to your communities, whether you are already connected or decide to form new ones. Please, if you can, contribute how you can and continue to find ways to find purpose in your lives, because that can be very hard to do right now. And with that, let's get to our conversation with Etiko Daimo. Though I've known of Etiko for a long time, this is the first we're meeting, so I'm glad we're doing so here. Etiko's been involved in lots of percussion activities for a long time, so it was great to discuss these here. Etiko is regularly employed both as a freelancing solo percussionist and as an educator. She's been giving concerts and masterclasses as a solo percussionist in various forms for a long time and has been teaching at a variety of locations. While living primarily in Oregon, she's a regular faculty member for the Juilliard Pre-College Division and percussion instructor at the NYU School of the Arts. Additionally, she holds regular teaching and performing positions at various locations in Europe and in Japan throughout the year. She's incredibly active while also being a mother to a young child, a rarity in this profession, but fortunately something we are seeing in the percussion field with more regularity. We get to all of this, as well as to discussions of the nature of arranging for the marimba, making a career as a solo performer, her background and schooling in Japan, her years in Boston as a master's student, and, because I misjudged the amount of time we had left, a very, very brief usual closing to our show. Nonetheless, this is a great conversation, so let's get to it. We recorded this interview over Zoom on January 13th, 2025, and it begins right now. So, Etiko, give me a summation of your percussion activities and responsibilities as they are right now.
Right now. So, you know, I'm not orchestra player or in a band player. I'm a soloist. So, like, my boss is myself, right?
Yep.
So I'm the one who has to be tough to myself to, you know, push my level, push my, you know, technique, musicality, and everything. And, you know, I always think I need to be better than yesterday. You know, my next performance going to be the best one, you know. So that's my responsibility to be a soloist. And at the same time, as a musician and a percussion player, our world is still relatively new compared to the piano, violin. Of course, percussion has a huge, long history, but the repertoire-wise, we don't have so much repertoire compared to other instruments. So for me, it's very important to do commissioning to the new project and to the very good composers, communicate with composers and have, you know, nice repertoire to our instruments, not only, you know, casual, you know, cute repertoire. So it's very important to develop our repertoire. And at the same time, it's also, for me, it's also important to do some arrangement for marimba, already existing piece to adapt. Then, well, you know, if no musician people might not know what marimba is, right? Mm-hmm. But they hear something, some famous pop song or tunes on marimba, they might be interested in marimba. Mm-hmm. That's it. You're happy. I'm happy about that. For example, like holiday season, go back to the hometown, and then your grandma, grandparents, what are you praying? And, oh yeah, I pray marimba. What marimba? Can you pray for me? then play something they know, that kind of tune, they'll be more happy, you know. Then additionally, we can play that contemporary new music too.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I, for me, it's very important to have those two balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other thing. And one more thing is teaching. I love teaching. And also, it's also responsible, I think, for teaching. Now I teach at the Juilliard Pre-College and New York University and Kyoto City University of the Arts. And those three, I really love teaching and having, you know, dialogue with young generation, like next generation people, to help and support and share their, you know, ideas together, then for our future, you know. Those three. And one more thing is my, you know, my private. I'm a mother of the 3 years old daughter, so that's, you know, my main job too.
Sure. Yes. Tell me about the position at NYU. How long that's been going on, and what how does it work in terms of how much you're able to teach and how that all functions?
Well, yeah, it's so, I really appreciate my boss, Jonathan Haas, who is the chairman at the NYU, and Sean Stutzer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those two, I really appreciate. I love my colleagues. And first, they started, invited me 2013 as a guest artist.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started teaching in there as an adjunct in, twenty nineteen or eighteen.
So, but like just before the pandemic?
Yes, before the pandemic. Okay. Yeah. So I go teach there, you know, every week, and also have my own studio for marimba people to teach only marimba. Then I have a baby, so 2021. So it was difficult for me to, you know, teach every week and commute. I live in West Coast, Oregon, and then go to New York every week or every 2 weeks. It's not possible anymore.
Right.
So they reduced the hour, but they made a position for me. So artist in residence. So I go there every month now, and then I teach private lesson as well as a group lesson and master class, and we do like some marimba party, which we pray together, like everyone pray, and then everyone has to say something about those performance exchange, you know, so those stuff, you know, those fun stuff. So yeah, now I do that at NYU. Yeah. And when I go to New York, every time I teach private lesson at the Juilliard Pre-College as well. So it's, you know, very nice combination for me. Yeah.
So when you go there every month, how long do you stay? Because obviously I would assume that when you go, they like pack everything in to like use every single hour of your time, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's so interesting. Yes. I'm so happy they do that too. I love teaching too. So, but you know, West Coast to East Coast is so far away. So yeah. I leave my house like 3:30 a.m. Then go to airport, light airplane, arrive in New York 3:30 p.m. And arrive Juilliard 5:30 p.m. I start teaching 6 p.m.
Oh my gosh. I hope you sleep on the plane or something.
Yeah, 6 p.m. to, you know, sometime 9, sometime 10. Then next day, 8 a.m. to, you know, 6 p.m. Then, you know, like that. Then NYU, 11 to 9, you know. But then, so when I really pack, I put within only 4 days.
Okay.
Sometimes 4 days, sometimes 7 days, you know, depends on what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Usually once a month or two times a month. Yeah. So
yeah.
It's and I love it. It's very different.
Sure.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
Yeah. Well, and I would assume that when you do go over there, then you're not just doing the teaching, but I would guess that if you have students who are given recitals or they have, like, you try to put those performances when you're there in person as well, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. With a position like that, are there any responsibilities to the school, like committees or other things that are kind of like outside, that are like kind of part of a more standard teaching schedule that you have to do? Is it you can just come in and do the teaching and leave?
Yes. Well, of course, I have a colleague, so we have to do some, you know, paperwork too.
Sure.
It's different from usual university, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We have a committee for the new music and also commissioning.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, at Juilliard Pre College, we commissioned to Keiko Abe 2 to 3 years ago for solo marimba piece, and I premiered at Juilliard. And then this year in April, we'll premiere. That's a percussion sextet. Sextet piece, and composed by Stuart Copeland.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like super exciting. Those, you know, we have a meeting, and of course, we do have a Zoom meeting like almost every month to catch up, like every student's activity and repertoires, those things, because we do group lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So, but not like intense, you know. Well, yeah, of course, when we hire someone for percussion studio, mm-hmm. we had an audition and we had a meeting too, but not like crazy.
I gotcha. Very cool. On the solo side, it was, you know, when you were kind of describing what you do, being, you know, a solo artist, and there's a lot of questions that I was thinking about. One of them is, do you handle all of your the scheduling of recitals and concerts? Is that all you as well, or does somebody help you out to get those things set up?
Half and half.
Okay,
I do it myself, but yeah, there are people who support me as well.
How far in advance do you have to look to try to get on like a yearly artist series or things like that to kind of, so that it can work out to get everything scheduled in term? Because sometimes I don't know if these are when you're scheduling performances, if they're just kind of maybe a one-off event, or if a place that's trying to bring you in is putting you into like a, like, we have a schedule of artists and this is our, you know, Eric Odaimo annual concert series.
Usually with playing with orchestra, a concerto playing, those are usually already set the date, and they ask me which this day does it work or not.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, of course, concerto, those are involved more people.
Right.
So I need to adjust as much as possible, right? So, but usually those comes maybe 2-3 years advance.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And sometimes, yeah, of course, there are some last minute requests too, but those are maybe at least, you know, a few months before, right?
Yeah.
Then concert series is also, you know, a year ahead, usually a year at least, you know, half year, 2 years, you know. So those I need to adjust. So concertos and, you know, concert series, then small gigs around there. If I go like some city, then, you know, try to put some others like masterclass or stuff like that. Yeah, that's happened.
On the concerto side, Like, if they want you to play something, do you say like, here's like four pieces that I'm more or less ready to play? Or does it frequently involve like, here's a new piece and you are premiering it, or is it a mixture of both?
Probably 90% of the time, orchestra request the piece.
They request a piece. Okay.
Yeah. Like, okay. Can you play this piece?
Yeah. Yeah.
We are going to we want you to play, but we want to commission to this composer.
Yeah. So
can you world premiere? Or, you know, then of course, when orchestra asks me, can you play this piece? Then
the answer is yes, you can. Yeah.
Yes.
Haven't seen it. Yes.
How about this piece? But usually I say, well, sorry, but this concert is, you know, have a theme and, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah.
But, you know, I also want to try to diverse my repertoire and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm featured some composer's concerto piece I want to bring up. So yeah. I ask orchestra, you know, pretty often. But so far I've been playing like pretty good repertoire with orchestra, which I'm really fortunate of. Yeah.
It's kind of a weird question, but how many pieces do you think you could, if something came up that was kind of, well, it doesn't have to be an orchestra thing, but it could be kind of a solo concert and maybe something's coming up pretty soon. How are you, do you feel like you have enough in the kind of in your rep right now that you just be like, I could put that on next week if I need to?
I can do tonight.
Good. Oh, sweet. Nice.
Always ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, of course. I think that's is a soloist we need to be. If you are asked, you need to be ready all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
what's the do you know what, like, just amount of pieces that you feel that if like called into something tonight, you could mm-hmm. be like, I could play that.
I will ask like, first, you know, is it going to be chamber music or is it concerto, or it's like, what are they looking for? What organization is looking for? Then
yeah,
I'm sure I can do it. But, you know, that's a so interesting question, because probably you also have that kind of dream, but tonight I also had one of those dream nightmare.
Yeah.
Like, you have to play this now.
Yes.
Now, okay, okay.
We do you have the music?
Rehearsal. Yeah, rehearse without rehearsal. Now you go.
Yeah.
I'm not even wearing a dress. You know, I had that nightmare again. I don't know how many times I had that nightmare in my life. Have you ever had that before?
Yeah. Not as. I don't think it's as serious. But yes, I've had the. I'm not ready. What are you talking about? What piece? Do I know this?
Yeah, I know. So yeah, that's kind of a dream always have. But that's nightmare. But same time, it's wonderful to, you know, have any opportunity for perform. So
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I'm asking something like that is not I think it's one of those aspects of being the type of performer you are that is, I think, a norm. Like, it's no big deal for you. Like, you know that you have to have this much music ready. Mm-hmm. But if you're not I don't play all the time, but I know that I can put a recital on in like every 6 months if I like had to.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I can't do like that kind of thing, like what you do. But so I'm curious, like, how much, that's why I ask. I'm like, you have to just be ready with, I would say, a lot of music.
Yeah.
That's, and even probably, I would assume things that are just, you've played them a lot. And so it's like, you know, you kind of know like where they're at level wise.
Well, I didn't say I can play, but I didn't say I can play perfectly.
Oh, no, right, yes.
Right. But, well, I mean, yes, but that's going to be my best concert too. So sure. Next one, that's going to be my best concert. So at the same time, you say you don't feel comfortable or you don't want to do that, but because you do teach at the university, those have to have a lots of, time for committee you are talking about before. Yeah, not only teaching.
Right.
Committee and paperwork.
Those
I cannot do well. So that's, some people are good at, some people are not. I'm definitely not good at paperwork. So
I've been forced to get okay at paperwork.
So much email, so much paperwork, that's amazing how people can handle and music and teaching,
Yeah. It's a lot of emails. I'm not going to. You were mentioning about how you want to, have continue to expand repertoire for marimba. Where you look to go, to find music that you either want to arrange or other people have arranged. Is this something when you're, kind of throughout a year or throughout a couple of years where you kind of set a goal of like, I want to learn like this, this, and this, or is it just kind of, you have a performance that's coming up that requires some of these aspects and you're like, I'm going to work on them for that?
Well, yeah, definitely in a both way. Mm-hmm. I do both way. Yeah, sometime organization ask me to, can you play this piece on marimba? Well, let me try, So those are one thing. And other thing is, not sometime, but most of the time when I have a concert in many different places, I try to arrange their folk song. Yeah, or
like if you're in a different country and you want to play something that they know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As an encore, mm-hmm. or as a, just if recital, I put, at least one piece, or if that's a new music concert, then I will put as a encore, mm-hmm. or concerto encore, or something, So that's also very good exercise for me. For my brain and mm-hmm. also my ear, and it's also nice to study their own language or the music. So yeah. I love it. So that's kind of one of my project, to do many arrangements wherever I go. For example, it doesn't need to be the folk song if the something people know is kind. For example, the Spruce Takusi by Sibelius.
Yeah, I have your page up. I was looking at it before. Yep, I see it.
Thank you. Awesome. Yeah, so that's also, I arranged that when I had a concerto with the orchestra in Finland. And then after that, I played that a lot because I love that piece. And and other than that, Debussy, Satie is also for France, and Taiwan. Taiwan is for their folk song, mm-hmm. Korea, their folk song, those. I just love those. So that's, I feel like some connection with the audience. And while I'm in there, before performance, I will ask the local people to, can you listen this? Is it sounds okay? Or, to check,
Or you just be like, tell me if you recognize this piece and you're like, they're like, oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes. So I will ask, advice, stuff like that, communicate. Yeah, yeah. And that's, another thing. Then one more thing is years of the project. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of arrangements, like I said from the beginning, and I just pick some composer's piece, which I love. Mm-hmm. Or when I'm watching a movie, then suddenly I get some nice sounds, or TV show even. Then I check the composer and check, can I, try and those. And in the future, I really want to do all Beatles concert on marimba. Some kind of, live, I love Beatles, so yeah.
Oh, nice. No, that'd be great. Have you arranged their music before?
Yeah, of course, many. Yeah, many.
What songs?
Well, my one of my favorite to adapt very well is In My Life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, In My Life, adapt on a very well, but I play on a different key.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can get the sped up harpsichord thing. You can like rip that off. No problem. Like that last.
Yeah. Those I love. Yeah. In My Life, Blackbird.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, and, you know. Yeah, those many, yes. I think that's also because when I was studying in Boston, I was studying at Boston Conservatory as well as Berkeley.
Yeah.
Under Nancy Zeltzman and Dave Samuels and Ed Sandin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a very, very, you know, super good experience in there. And one of the class, I had to arrange some music every week. You know, every week I have to do some new arrangement. So that was also very good practice for me to arrange quickly, you know.
Yeah. It feels like some of the challenge there is finding something that is like to know find something where you're like, that actually works. Because sure there are lots of pieces of music you're like, well, I would love to play that, but it's a no.
Exactly. So we can start recognize, it does work. But still, we are not sure until spend so much time.
Right.
Do you know the Firebird?
Mm-hmm.
Lullaby? Right. That orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Friend, Johan Bricker, he's a fantastic percussion player and based in Sweden. Yeah. We played together many, many times, but he's fantastic. And he played that on marimba. I would never expect that can happen, but so beautiful. And he played amazing. And he was also played Paganini arranged before, and he does lots of beautiful things which I never would actually think can happen. I mean, imagine that's gonna work or not, but when he play, it's fantastic. So that happened too. So when I play Kusi Sibelius, started practicing, my husband Pius Cheng thought, well, it's probably not gonna work, it's too hard. Yeah, but too hard is my problem.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. You know,
I just need to practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So, let's see. Yeah. Well, I'm going to spend at least 1 month, I say. Then, start it. Okay, it would work. Okay, I just need to practice, you know?
Yeah.
So, also, I spend so much time for arranging a piece when I was studying Boston, especially, but still not sure. Until I spend so much time and energy. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I think what you probably realize on doing some of those arrangements is there does come a point where you're like, okay, some of this is actually too hard. Like I'm not like I could practice this.
Yeah. Exactly.
For 7 more years, and what am I going to get out of it? Like I'm just going to be tired.
Actually, that's the point you have to recognize. Okay, I can do this. I can do this, but is it suitable for this instrument or not?
Right.
That's the point of like, right now, like, it's important for us to push up our level of the technique, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, I want to create my new technique and, you know, the tool. It's important.
I was really surprised how much I liked it. Adelaide Ferrier. If you've heard her do the Rhapsody in Blue for solo marimba.
Not in live.
Oh, yeah. So she did it at PASIC a number of years back. And I was expecting not to like it. And I thought it was great. Like, it worked way better than I thought. Like, I think it's because of how good of a player she is. And like, also the arrangement was actually, like, I think really smartly done.
Oh, wonderful.
But I was like, wait, because I think I'd asked her about it. And I said, wait, are you doing the whole thing? And she's like, yeah. oh, you know, I didn't know. I was like, oh, you're doing an arrangement. You'll do, you know, you'll do like, you know, 12 minutes or something. She's like, no, she did like all 25 or whatever. It was 22 or something. It was very good. I thought it worked really well.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's great. Well, we do have, I played a duo version with Pius. Mm-hmm. And we do duo a few times already, lots of notes. So yeah, of course we do 25 minutes version, but we had to reduce so much note and it's so hard.
Yeah.
Duo.
Yeah.
I'm curious how she arranged.
Yeah. It like I said, it was, I was surprised how well I thought it worked.
Oh, wonderful.
Cause it still had I think the, one of the challenging things, cause I, my doctoral thesis was on marimba transcriptions of piano music. And one of the bad versions was, attempted arrangements of, Clair de Lune for solo marimba.
That's work.
Well, I found a version from like the 50s, which was for a 4-octave marimba. And it was really bad. I'm not kidding. It was not good at all.
Well, I can't say anything because, I haven't listened to your version, but I'm sure it does work. And then now you can do 5-octave version.
Right. Well, the thing that if you know the piece well, but yeah, like the part of the problem with that particular piece of music is the middle of the original has like all the sostenuto pedal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the ways that like the left hand is just flying across you can't get like something like a sound that's similar enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you really have to like really reimagine that spot.
Yeah, you need to actually compose around that area,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not transcription.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, well, I played on piano many times. That
piece. Yeah, yeah. It's a great piece.
Wonderful piece. But of course, yeah, it's hard to play on marimba.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I did when I did my lecture recital on it, I did play the last like page direct from the piano score to marimba. And that actually worked really well. But it was but it was just the last page of like 7, you know. But still, it fit the range. I didn't have to adjust really much of anything. And the resonance of the bottom range of the marimba like completely worked.
Yeah.
For that.
It's so interesting to talking about what would work and what would not work.
Mm-hmm.
For the marimba composition, sometime. Although it sounds easy, sometimes it's ridiculously hard, you know, technically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I won't compose that to avoid
to write. Right, right, yes.
For example, Keiko Abe's piece does work anywhere, anytime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like any place.
Mm-hmm.
She, of course, she knows the instrument, the composition, but it does work so well, like perfectly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But some pieces does not work. If you play somewhere super dry, super no ringing, for example, Debussy playing, Clair de Lune playing in a very dry place.
Oh, yeah.
Then that's would not be so much fun.
Right.
That's kind of a fear, you know. Keiko Abe's piece does work in a dry place or somewhere full wet or somewhere super ringing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, so much of her, she uses the upper range so well and so often that, and I think it's because of like the repeated nature of so much of the writing that it's like, you're right. Like, I think in a dry space, you're just, the notes are just going to kind of come at you as fast as they do. And it's just going to work.
Right, right, right. Yeah. That's amazing. Of course, we have to push our level over the mm-hmm. to make it, you know, easy for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I do commission, like, composer, and I talk, okay, this pattern is hard to play, also sounds easy.
Yeah, but yeah.
You do like this, it's much easier.
Right.
And effective. And then, you know, those composer, you know, they can change, and then next piece of his or hers is going to be much easier, but yeah. Sounds super, you know, more virtuosic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Or they'll just be like, but I mean, I could just do it this way on piano.
Yeah.
And you're like, that I didn't, no, this is what I got, not this.
I know. Well, yeah, but same time, I really tried my best.
Yeah.
For example, at the Dai Fujikura, I commissioned a piece. It's called Dai Dai.
Okay.
Solo marimba with three percussion player.
Okay.
And, well, I premiered, U.S. premiered his marimba solo piece as well before, and it was so hard and hardest piece ever.
Yeah.
For me. Yes. Super hard. It's so beautiful, but it's super hard.
Yeah, yeah. But
I love that piece. Anyway, so he commissioned, and then that, of course, his marimba solo piece pushed my level. Yeah.
Yeah.
The technique level. Okay, now I can do this because yeah. of this. And then this time, the Dai Dai, the new piece, well, there are also some spot I felt, this. Probably I can't do, but I don't want to say I can't do this. You know, then he will be, oh, okay. Oh, on piano, you can do this. Oh, but on marimba, oh, you can't do. No, I want to try. So I try like with a metronome, like it starts with four notes, right? So not take with the pianissimo.
Yeah, yeah. All these double verticals, yeah. Yeah. Right.
So I was like, first I could play only the half tempo. So every day, you know, with a metronome, you know, mm-hmm. go to the high school feel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, push my, you know, technique of my hand, and finally I could do it. I was like, first I couldn't do it. Now I'm so happy I can do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so happy, you know. So he was also happy, and I was so happy too. But so those things we never know until we commission the piece, and it's fun thing for me to see. Oh, okay, now marimba can do this too.
Yeah. Those are great points. These are amazing points. All right, well, Eriko, let's back up. Where did you grow up?
I born in Kagoshima, Japan. It's a southern part of Japan. I don't know if you have many Japanese friends or not, but Japan, like southern part and the northern part, that character of the people are very different, northern, southern, and also depends on where you are from. Like same as Italy, this place is known for this food, they are known for this, you know, mountain, you know, each single state have their own famous thing, right? And in my hometown, in the southern part, people are so happy and drinking, partying all the time. And they have a really great food. And when I born actually in a very little island, it's called Tanegashima. Super, super little island. It's, yeah, part of Kagoshima. I grew up until in there until three, when I was three. And then moved to, you know, because of my father's job, we have to move every 2 to 6 years maximum.
Mm-hmm.
We moved a lot, and then, you know, mainland Kagoshima. So when I was five, I started playing piano. Piano is always, because my older sister was also playing piano.
Mm.
So, of course, I want to follow
yeah, sure.
what she's doing, and she's playing, so I want to play same thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a piano teacher now, too.
Oh, all right. There you go.
Then I started doing a brass band.
Oh, okay.
Yes, when I was 10, I think. I was playing trumpet.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Surprisingly bad.
Well, you have to, because it's a wind instrument, I recall. That's why.
Well, you know, my older sister, again, was playing trumpet too.
Ah.
Yes, I want to play trumpet too. So, of course, piano always, but trumpet I studied is surprisingly bad. The teacher, band director, said, like, maybe you can play percussion instruments. Because a piano player, so.
Yeah, sure.
And quick, you know?
Yeah.
I can run quickly. So, yeah, then I studied percussion around 11 or 12. Then started playing band.
Mm-hmm.
In the drum set.
Girls
band, yeah, I was doing. So I was playing drum set. Then went to high school, which had a music major. Yeah, and then, but that school was amazing. You have to do, of course, piano lesson, percussion lesson, and singing, vocal lesson, and solfège, ear training, and everything. Yeah, and music history, theory, and everything. So then I went to university in Nagoya, where I did performance major as well as music ed. Yeah, because my father, accountant for the government, so he was saying, you know, if you go to music school, you have to take music ed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of promise. So I did that. Then, where I study, Mizaki Imamura, he was NHK timpani, NHK symphony, the timpani, percussion player.
Okay.
Yeah, and Momoko Kamiya. She's my marimba teacher.
Okay.
Yes. So then after that, I moved to Boston because I wanted to have more language and, you know, musical variety of the language and a drawer of the many music, you know, pops and jazz and arrangement and classic and contemporary. So that's why I moved. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing I definitely do not know the geography of Japan all that well. Yeah. I'll just be honest there. I feel like, see, and part of it, when you were saying where you were from, I was, of course, you know, I'm going to be like, well, where is that in relation to Tokyo? Like, and not like I would, that's going to help, but like, I don't even know where, I was like, where in Japan is Tokyo? I don't even know. So.
Yeah. Well, Tokyo is a center in Japan. Okay. Then southern part, northern part, Hokkaido is the most northern part. Mm-hmm. Then on top is Russia, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Then here, the southern part. Do you know Okinawa?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Okinawa is the most south part of Japan, right?
Okay.
Then next southern part of Japan is Kagoshima, where I'm from.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That helps. I can start to place it now. Growing up there, how much of the entire country do people see, or do people kind of stay in like they do in many places? They kind of stay where they're at, and they're comfortable there. I mean, did you see a lot of the country growing up?
Yes, but not everything.
Sure.
Yeah, not everything. Well, probably you understand that when you are kids, you're busy for doing a band and, you know, and you cannot travel by yourself.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so but at least once a year, we had a family trip to go somewhere, you know, but not everywhere. After I moved to US and after I graduate school, and start playing more and more, then I have a more opportunity and more time for myself to spend to see the world. Before, of course, before pandemic, my best friend and I are traveling to somewhere together, you know, some new place, and you know, to, you know, just want to see, you know, different part of Japan.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. And Since last year, we also, since 2 years ago, we started doing that again. Now, I have my family with baby, and my best friend also have a baby.
Yeah.
And that's actually percussion studio from Japan.
Oh, great. Yeah.
My university, percussion studio. So six of us, travel together, or seven or eight of us sometime. Yeah. That's a, fun thing to do. Yeah.
I mean, it's very different. I know you know this as well, that like the traveling as someone very young is so much different.
Absolutely.
Traveling as an adult when you're like, oh, now things like, things, I'm seeing things differently now, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When I was high school student and I was 17, my first trip to outside of Japan was to Vienna and Paris.
Oh, wow.
That was a school trip. So because our class as a music major, so we traveled to Vienna and Paris. And so, of course, that's kind of fairy tale story. At that time, we don't have internet. I mean, there must be internet, but we didn't have any, chance to use internet at all. So first time to go outside of Japan, then that's like miracle.
Yeah.
Then we went to Vienna State University of Arts, and where we took a master class, and I was, wow, I want to come back here in the future.
Yeah.
Then actually, 10 years later, they invited me as a guest artist.
Nice.
That's amazing.
That's the dream right there.
Yeah, exactly. So I was, wow. So traveling young when you are young, that's also very, very important.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, again, this will show my ignorance of Japan. How is travel, like if you're going to travel like up and down, because it's just this enormous series of islands, is it a lot of flying? Is there boat travel? Like, I guess there's many options, I would guess.
Yeah.
Hey, just car? Is it close enough to do car? I have no idea.
Yes. There are many options. For example, Tokyo, Tokyo, Nagoya, Osaka, Kyoto. Tokyo, Nagoya, Kyoto, Osaka.
She's going south when she's saying this. Yes.
Going down, down, down. Then Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Right? To Okinawa, we have to use boat or airplane.
Mm-hmm.
There is no, traveling by car. But to Kagoshima, to Tokyo, yes, of course, we can go by car. Yeah. But usually we don't do that because we have a nice access by airplane. And also, do you know bullet train?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have a bullet train to Kagoshima too. Kagoshima to Osaka, yes, it's still 4 hours by bullet train. So, sometime. But usually I use airplane. Yeah, well, airplane from Tokyo to Kagoshima is an hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's very close. Relatively. So, if you live in U.S.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, when I was in Kagoshima, then go to Tokyo, then people say, "Oh, you came from Kagoshima today? Oh, you must be so tired." Not at all. America is so huge. So
yeah, that's always again another thing where even though I've had a chance to travel to a lot of places, it's still hard to kind of place how close things are or are not.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if you're one of the things, I know you know this from being in Europe as much as you have, that it's like once you get to Europe travels actually kind of easy.
Easy.
And it's not that expensive either. That's the other thing.
Exactly. And also if you ride a train 2 hours, you'll be totally different country.
Yes. If you take a bus for 45 minutes, you can be in a different country depending on where you're going.
different food, different language, culture. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorites was my wife and I were in Milan. No, we were in Lake Como, even better, in northern Italy. And there was a bus that took us into Lugano, Switzerland.
Oh.
1 hour. You go up, down, you're in. And it's like, I'm in Switzerland. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah.
How far along did you get on the piano side? In terms of like what were you playing lit wise? Did you get like really far and then you kind of the percussion thing started to just kind of develop or did you stop?
So when I went to university, I think my golden time of the piano was probably high school.
Okay.
Yeah. Rachmaninoff and Prokofiev, then
you know,
Russian composers, then you know, technically super hard stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And
of course, Liszt.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Then after university, started so busy too. And until high school, when I was in high school, I still had a private lesson every week, like 2 hour private lesson on piano with my private teacher. And on top of that, an hour private lesson at that school. So 3 hours piano lesson every week, right?
Wow.
So, yeah. Besides 3 hours lesson on percussion. Private lesson.
Every week on percussion too?
Every week.
Oh my gosh.
That's at the school.
Yeah. But that's so much lit.
I know. But I was so fortunate. I was so lucky. I'm lucky still, but back then I was lucky too. So every year has a 3 hours private lesson, but depends on how many students. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And my year, they accepted only me. So I was the only percussion student.
Okay.
That's why I could have a 3 hours private lesson with the teacher.
Oh, sure. I got you.
But other year, there are, you know, 4 students, they have to divide those 3 hours.
I got
by
you.
All of them. Yeah. So, but I was myself, so I was so lucky to do private 3 hours, especially at that time is, you know, mostly focused on the fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So usually we spend an hour fundamental, you know, snare drum.
Yeah, yeah.
And an hour marimba, an hour other percussion instruments, you know. So time flies so quick every week. Yeah. Then
yeah.
Piano was, you know, of course, for piano, you have to practice Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, on top of that, Debussy or, you know, Rachmaninoff. Different years of the composer, like 5 of them, same time. So 3 hours lesson goes, you know.
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. That's like half a ballade, basically, is all you're doing for 3 hours. You could do like the first two parts of the Chopin's first ballade and be like, there were 3 hours, kaboom, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. Yeah, Chopin ballade was my favorite too, yes. Yeah, last performance of the Chopin ballade actually at the university, yeah. My golden time was definitely high school for the piano.
Yeah, that's fine. That's great.
At university, I only had a piano lesson 30 minutes every week at school.
Yeah.
And then percussion lesson and, you know, music ed as well as, you know, orchestra, brass band, you know, university schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, I was doing an Italian restaurant part-time job.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so busy.
Yeah, yeah. In Japan, there was the Italian restaurant.
Italian restaurant, yes.
Yeah. How was it? How was the food?
Oh my gosh, that's so delicious. You know, chef used to live in Italy.
Okay. Yeah.
So
it's pretty good, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And they opened a new restaurant, so I was an open staff.
Yeah.
Yeah, open staff, and I worked in there for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I didn't need to cook every day, you know. Also, I work in there like 2 hours, 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, you know, eat dinner and go back.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, so that was fantastic. And so because of that, that restaurant, you went to Italy, so you probably, you might know, do you know Capri the island?
I know it. I haven't been there.
Capri Island. The restaurant name was Capri the island. Restaurant the Capri. So I wanted to go to Capri Island. And I finally went there after, when was that? I forgot. Well, 2019, I think. Yes. Yeah, like you say, Switzerland and Italy right next to each other.
Yeah.
I was having a gig. I was teaching in Graz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then after Graz, I went, flew to the Italy with my husband. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then went to Capri Island and Venice and, you know,
nice.
Milan and Napoli and Rome, everywhere. Yeah.
Awesome. Have you been to Siena?
No, not yet.
Okay.
I will. Yeah.
It's great. Good. My wife was originated a study abroad there at Mizzou. And so I would go visit her. Like, she would spend basically the month of June teaching there.
Oh.
And it's a place that's gotten way, way more popular over the years, particularly recently. But when she started going almost a decade ago now, it was nice. Like, it was kind of like this hidden jewel. It's one of those cities that's kind of on a hill, and it's like all these kind of streets that just kind of wrap around, and it's still really nice, but there's way, way more people there than there once was.
Wow. Yeah, Italy is one of my favorite country. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's pretty great. You mentioned brass band.
Wind ensemble.
Okay.
Yeah, wind ensemble in Japan. The kind of high school wind ensemble is a big deal in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Have a, you know, competition and, you know, first state competition, the next is a bigger district competition, then go to the national competition, you know, those, you know, every time, you know, play and cry kind.
Wow. That's emotional.
Yeah. Very emotional. Super, super emotional. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that, you know, have a time limit. Like each high school has a requirement piece and has to be within 8 minutes, including the moving, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Hitting the instruments, stuff like that. And then, of course, all those wind ensemble, everyone memorize.
Oh, wow.
Everyone memorize the music and everyone look at the conductor and with crying, with crying. And I loved it. Yeah, I was crying.
Now you're mad that no one cries when you're probably in your performances. Like, what?
Yeah.
Where's all the emotion?
Now I'm a professional, so my emotion goes through the instruments.
I see.
Through my eyes.
Yes. Good answer. That's good. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's great. How many options are there for someone if they grow up in Japan to go do music at a university? Are there like a lot of universities, or is there like only a few and this is where everyone wants to try to go?
So there are many.
Okay.
Yeah, there are many private universities.
Okay.
Yes, music university, private, yes. But we have only 4 states and national.
Okay.
University of the Arts.
Okay.
One is in Okinawa, so which is a bit far away from, sure, you know, everywhere. It's difficult to go there, you know. One is in Tokyo. One is in Nagoya.
Mm-hmm.
And one is in Kyoto.
Okay.
Where I teach.
Okay.
Yeah. This Kyoto one is the oldest music university in Japan. Yeah. Then next is the Tokyo University of the Arts.
Okay.
And then the other one is the one I went, the Aichi University of the Arts. So those are, you know, in the main, including Okinawa, there are 4. national and the states. So which means those schools are, of course, we have audition, but we need to take the exam of English, Japanese, math, you know, those. And in a certain level of that score, you cannot take the audition.
So you have to get into the university before you can even apply. Audition?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So then we have an audition. I don't know now, but when I took, we had until three round. So first round is, basic percussion and marimba. Second round is percussion, marimba, as well as a piano and ear training.
Okay, yeah.
Singing. And for third round is also like some history, theory, and more instruments. Yeah. So the national universities are, well, depends on where, but it's kind of limited accept.
Sure.
Because tuition is much cheaper, like 10 times cheaper and 10 times or more even, maybe. Yeah. And of course, there are some private music university too. It's, bigger range. Some schools are harder to go, but some schools are not too hard, more, open kind.
Are all of the state and national schools, are those actually like the top? Is that like if your teachers in high school would want you to try to go to those if you can get in? Or could you do as well at the private institutions?
So it's, I was, my teacher, former teacher, she's an amazing person and a teacher and a musician. She used to study at the University of Michigan.
Okay.
And Michael Udall.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an amazing person. And she was never pushed me to go anywhere. Again, my father was, so we have three sisters in the middle. Private university, music university, no. If you want to do music, go to the states or national university.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then, later he said, if you really want to go private too, then you can go private. But, in my opinion, I was thinking, I wanted to study with Momoko Kamiya, my teacher, former teacher.
Mm.
So where she teach at that time was Aichi University of the Arts.
Okay.
Yes. And she was also teaching at the different universities too in Tokyo. But Aichi University of the Arts was the only university, only States University where Momoko Kamiya was teaching. So I was naturally thought, well, I want to study with her, so I want to go that place.
Yeah.
And that place had Mitsaki Imamura, the percussion teacher. He's also amazing. So yeah, why not? Yeah. So that's how I decided to, go there.
Gotcha. What were facilities like at the university?
So, of course, private university has, fancier stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And my university, my former Aichi University of the Arts, they are in the middle, in the top of the mountain.
Okay.
Super beautiful. Do you know the Ghibli movies? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can imagine like that. Like, you can see Totoro or Kodama.
Well, if you practice long enough,
yeah, exactly.
You might just imagine that you are actually seeing Totoro.
Yeah. Well, when I hear, that's kind of bad sound. I thought bird is there, but that was not bird. That a moss, a huge moss.
And yeah, yeah.
It's incredible, and yeah, it's a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
And students are practice everywhere in a hill, in a mountain.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, super peaceful place.
Yeah. And it could be, and it sounds like it could also be so remote that there's not much else to do but practice.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So once you go to the campus, nothing. So we had to practice.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, of course, yes. Of course, but, you know, it's still Japan. So 5 minutes by car, you have many things to do.
Okay.
But suddenly that University of the Arts has so many nothing around there. And then we have a music department and arts department. Mm-hmm. So there are so many painting or sculpture everywhere. So that was fun, you know, fun. And when I was there, we had only one 5-octave marimba. And there was marimba one, and we have only 2 rooms for percussion players. So we are always fighting for the room.
Yeah.
But now they have more stuff. And where I teach, Kyoto University of the Arts, that's also state university in Japan, they moved in front of the Kyoto station last year.
Okay.
2 years ago. So they have an entirely new building.
Oh, nice.
Super fancy.
Yeah.
And beautiful, you know, rooms and equipment. Yeah, that's amazing. And actually, NYU also moved to a new building.
Mm.
3 years ago, I think. Yes. Their building is amazing, like 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Huge lounge and the sky top, you know, lounge, you know, that's, yeah, it's different from what I grew up with.
Sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing. At the university you're at, what was the ensemble experience like, both the, if on the percussion side and on the large ensemble side?
Well, it was great. I love percussion ensemble. And, you know, our teacher was super strict. Yes. Well, at this year, at this generation, we cannot imagine like that stuff. But old teacher, you probably know,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you did something wrong timing, you come in, then you are fired, switch.
Oh, wow.
It's like super, super tough.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sometimes he throw the mallets and, you know.
Yeah, you can't do that. It's bad practice.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, super strict, hardcore percussion ensemble. But because State University, it's a very limited student.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe 8 to 10 students we had. For entire 4 years, 6 years. So if you include the masters, then maybe 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, students, maximum. So we get very close. Everyone are like family, especially we have only 2 rooms. So we are together all the time, you know.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you like that person or not. You have to be with them. You have to be with them all the time. So we are like family. We love each other, of course. And then,
which again, you don't have to like them, but they may just be family.
Yeah, we are family. Yeah.
You gotta figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. But it was fun. Yeah, because of the ensemble we love, we did some, you know, outreach concerts too as an ensemble group. And you know, wearing Santa Claus and praying together, or, you know, or actual concert series as well. And for the percussion ensemble. And large ensemble was a wonderful thing, was everyone had opportunity to arrange something, piece to the large ensemble.
Awesome.
You need to arrange something. And do concerto. 1 year is you have to make something, so the concerto, play yourself. And, you know, band, large ensemble will do the, you know, accompaniment. Stuff like that. You know, that was great experience. Yes, and lots of those I did, yeah.
Were you given, on the arrangement side there, were you given any, like, parameters? Or was, like, just find something to arrange for ensemble?
Yeah, anything.
Okay.
Anything, yeah. I love arrangement, doing arrangement, you know, but some of them, it's a requirement class, but some of them are not so good at arranging.
Sure. Or
putting the tune, like putting the lighting in a note, sometimes if you put a different key signature, it sounds totally different, right? If you write for the horn, for example, it's, you know, not, well, any, you know, other instrument. Like, it depends on the instrument. It's clarinet, for example. Yeah, they play differently, right?
Yeah.
So one time my friend, trombone player, was playing arranged Beatles' Help.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he had a concerto on the trombone, but the orchestra got, like, missed. Oh my god,
burp.
Yeah, that's, you know, kind of fun thing we are, you know, had. Yeah.
So you did music ed?
Yes.
Is there in Japan is there a requirement for that degree to do student teaching?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went back to my former high school.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to go back to my high school and teach 3 weeks, I think.
Okay. Stay
there 3 weeks every day. And that was also fun because my best friends, they went back together. And they also, you know, took a music ed. So we all, you know, three of us, same class again for 2-3 weeks. And my main teacher was my high school teacher too.
Yeah.
He was my teacher for 2 years. Feels like went back to the high school again. So
yeah. At what point do you, when you're finishing up your undergrad, do you think, well, I could teach, but I actually want to go elsewhere and continue my education and continue playing?
Mm. So I was always having the question mark, what I can do.
Sure.
In this instrument. And probably you also understand it because you play piano too.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a background of a piano. So I was always not satisfied of my technique and also knowledge of the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can do more. I can do more. I must be able to do more of this instrument.
Yeah.
For piano, I started having, after playing at least.
Yeah.
I felt like, okay, maybe this is my goal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
This technique is best thing I can do.
Yeah, you're like, I don't need to, that's like hard. Like, I don't know.
It's hard.
Oh, yeah, it's really hard.
So it's okay.
Yeah, it's
but
fine.
I was, too, you know, I was having a competition, you know, on the piano. Yeah. So, but university, yeah, of course, I stopped doing piano competition and percussion only. Then
mm-hmm.
Seeing Keiko Abe playing and Momoko Kamiya playing, and I was like, wow. Then Momoko Kamiya, my teacher, suggested me to go to enter some camp, marimba camp.
Okay.
So I went to Nancy's camp, marimba camp in Appleton.
Oh, in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, Wisconsin. Yes. Yeah. That was my first visit to United States.
Wow. What a what a first place.
I know. I know. Wow, right? Yeah, yeah. So that was, and where I met like amazing people.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, of course, culture shock, of course. But yeah. Same time, I loved, and everyone, you know, plays so differently. And huge, you know, differences.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it so much. So yeah, at that time, I was clear I want to go outside of Japan and study more.
Yeah.
From my university, my older friend,
mm-hmm.
She studied with Eric Samuel and Frederick Macales in Paris after she graduated, and she was telling me the story about Paris, and now she plays pretty often at the Orchestra de Paris as well. She does a lot in Paris. And those stories inspired me very, you know, much. And also, as I mentioned before, the high school trip in Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Very like, you know, want to go outside. Then now started thinking, I love composers from France, mm-hmm. Germany as well, but and Europe and Scandinavia too. So I was maybe go to Europe, but same time I want to study jazz, improvisation, mm. and contemporary music too.
Yeah.
Then Nancy at the campus, Nancy was telling me, like, you can come study with me, and you can, same time you can study with Dave Samuels, and saying you don't need to study every week with me, you know. So mm-hmm. it's only her, you know, I can. And also, I was studying with a piano teacher on marimba.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I do arrangement, like Debussy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I took lesson from him on piano teacher instead of, you know, marimba. And violin piece, I study with violin teacher. You know, that's freedom that she gave me. So I thought, oh, that's amazing. So I decided to go Boston. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Boston, of course, as you know, very different from Wisconsin.
yes.
Probably not that different from other cities in Japan. I mean, bustling, you know.
It's a big difference. And when I went to Appleton, Wisconsin, after that, at that time, my English was terrible. I couldn't speak, you know, well at all. Hmm. But somehow I decided to go New York too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I went by myself and then I saw the New York as well. And I was, wow, it's huge. Then next year was Nancy's camp in Boston.
Mm.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, I went there with my best friend. He's now, Kazutaka Morita, he's a principal timpani player at the Finnish Radio Symphony Orchestra.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, he's also same university.
Mm-hmm.
So we went together and then, yeah, we both love Boston. And then, so I was, okay, I think this is it. I need to do something. Then, you know, negotiate with my parents.
Right, of course.
And then scholarship, you know.
It's interesting you say that, because that's one thing I do think about when, particularly when you grow up, when, you know, you're, you know, in the U.S. and you have been for a while, but like when you know, what are those conversations like with your folks who are like, hey, you're moving to like the other side of the planet. Are we going to see you? Like, you know, you have a grand, we, you have a grandchild. Like, I don't, all these, I'm just curious about like what's, for you, what were those conversations like when you're like, I want to go here. This is where I think the future is for me.
I'm not the best one to make a plan, probably.
Sure, yeah.
When I decided to move here, I didn't plan to live here.
Sure.
So long.
Just coming for school. You just
come to school and let's see. I like or not. Right. Mm-hmm. And but to go to school, I cannot work.
Right. Right?
Definitely need some help from parents.
Yeah, sure. Right?
Yeah. And grandparents, you know, my mom was, it's OK, if you want to try, you should try. And, you know, my father was also, yeah, we cannot, you know, financially support so much. So you need to do some student loan.
Yeah,
right. As much as possible, we can support, of course. So,
sure.
So yeah, and my mom was, yeah, I have three daughters, so you can go away.
Wow. You're like, how do I take that information?
you can go. Yeah, I have two more anyway.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, so I was, fine. And also, around me, my friends are also moved outside of Japan and everyone wants to go somewhere.
Oh, okay.
One of my friends stayed in Nagoya.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, yes, everyone moved to Tokyo or Osaka somewhere, or Finland, Paris, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what happened. So it was not, for me, it's more excited.
Sure.
Than, yeah, of course, get lonely and sad sometimes. Mm-hmm. Miss friends, of course.
Yeah.
But sometimes, at that time, was everyone is working so hard and yeah, don't know the future yet. So myself as well. So just work hard, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotcha. When you get to Boston and now you're in grad school, I would assume it's different in one way because you're around like some awesome players, like all over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when I went there, Pius.
Sure.
Pius Cheng and Keishi Kanjirozi.
Yep.
And Fumito Nunoya. Now he moved to Detmold, Germany. He teaches in there. And Jim Benoit.
Okay.
Jim Benoit, now he's a timpani player in the orchestra. Yes. So they are great players. So but same time, my former university in Japan was also everyone a great player. So, of course, impressive, but that different way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I saw Pius, I was, when I saw Pius' recital, I was, he played Chopin all four ballad on marimba.
Just cause, you know.
Yeah. At that time, he thought, you know, he wanted to try as much as possible.
Sure.
Yeah, now he thinks it doesn't work. it's very important to try, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he did arrange on four of them. And that was super beautiful, super touch. Just, you know, he decided to not anymore.
Yeah. And, that had to informed like all of his marimba writing was like all in a Chopin style. All the etudes and everything that's been that like tickly that he wrote like, you know, 10, 15 years ago is all that just like, it's those pieces, but originals.
Yeah, exactly. At that time, exactly. He wanted to write something like Chopin because marimba don't have that kind of repertoire.
Right.
But recent compositions of his are super different from before. Yeah. So anyway, when I saw his playing that, I was, wow, there is a genius. In Japan, it's not so easy to find a genius, to see the genius. So yeah. That's a different thing. Like you say, you're maybe amazed about the level of the player. Yeah, level is yes, of course, but finding those genius people here in the yeah. do you know Jonathan Singer?
I've heard the name.
Ah, yeah, Jonathan Singer. He was a Cookie Monster playing in New York. He's also from Berkeley, same, you know, same age generation. So, yeah, I was very fortunate to have that amazing superstars to have a, you know, classmate.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. What were some similarities and differences between, you know, studying with Nancy versus studying with your marimba teacher in Japan?
So their performance are very different, super. And my performance is super different from Nancy too. And she's amazing player. And first when I heard her playing, I felt like, oh, okay, I've never seen like that. Very careful, never miss.
Right.
So yeah. Emotion never go up to the, you know.
Sure, yeah, I know.
Super control, you know.
So she can do all that stuff, and she just doesn't.
Like, yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Like she's got it there. But it's exactly what you're saying. It's that style is the way that.
Yeah, it's like super different from my performance. So I thought maybe I can learn something from her because very different. And my teacher, Momoko Kamiya, I told her I want to study with you more. So I was also thinking to move to Tokyo to study with her. But she said, no, because you study with me already. And you should, you know, go outside of Japan, you know. Biggest difference is Momoko Kamiya, she come to school only two times a semester.
Oh, okay.
I see her only like four times a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So other than that, I have to do myself to, you know, develop my marimba. And of course, percussion lesson I had every week and the chamber ensemble orchestra every week. But marimba lesson was only four times a week, year. So then became every week lesson was a huge difference. You know, I needed to, you know, adjust. I love both of them, and I respect them both.
Sure. Just
learn different things from them.
Yeah. What was it? Was there a big transition to learning from Ed and Dave? Did you work with both of them as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
David Samuels is he knows the classic player how to take a time to, you know, transit to jazz arrangement, improvisation. So he taught me one step at a time. So he gave me 8 bars from the Bach, you know, some violin piece. And then okay, play this differently, like a different chord, but within this, and use only this tension note, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those super basic fundamental thing he taught me super carefully and he's very patient because first I moved there, my language is not good too, so many words I don't know, especially for the jazz word I didn't know. So it was so hard for me, but he was super patient, super nice all the time. And same for Ed was more advanced. Okay, play like this. Okay, try, you know, more like go, you know, stuff. But that was so much fun too. And so I was taking a private lesson with him and doing the, I don't remember the class name, but where I need to play with other people. Yeah, with a new tune every week, you know. Yeah, those are also nice. Yeah. So those experiments is also super big treasure for me, what I learned from there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. So this is the random ask questions segment. All right, first question is an issue in percussion performance or percussion education that most gets under your skin or drives you the most nuts?
Moving instruments.
Well, and I would imagine when you playing as much as you do on all these concerts, are you bringing your own instrument to a lot of them, or are you using someone else's?
Someone else, usually.
So only, that's a lot of adjustments.
Yeah.
All right. What's a favorite book?
That's also many. I love mysteries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, do you have a writer that you really like?
I read many Japanese books. So
okay.
Haruki Murakami is, of course, my favorite too. Keigo Higashino, mystery.
Okay.
And Kakuni, it's a love story.
What was the last author?
Kaori Ekuni. She's an author for the many love stories.
Gotcha. Okay. You've traveled to a lot of places. Where is somewhere that you have not traveled to that you still want to get to?
Guatemala.
Oh.
Yes.
Any particular reason?
Marimba is from Guatemala.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good choice. When you go back home, is there some place you have to eat, like a restaurant or something, where you're like, okay, I'm back?
Yes, of course, a lot.
What places?
A sushi restaurant, yakiniku restaurant, shabu shabu restaurant, izakaya, and a craft beer bar where I go there like every night by myself. You know.
Yeah. Gotcha.
At least five. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those are like just those, like those, you have to hit all of those places, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both of them are must go.
Okay. That's awesome. What's the strangest, funniest, or most bizarre performance moment that involves you?
So one time, well, there are many funny moments, but one time I never forget. One concert which was inside of a hotel garden, super beautiful place in Spain, near the beach. I forgot the name of the place. Super, super beautiful, gorgeous hotel. And it's a, you know, inside hotel, but it's a garden. So it's, you know, outdoor, right?
Okay.
I was playing, last phase, but dropped poops on the monitor.
No! Oh my gosh!
Oh my God, yes. Okay, luckily not when I was praying, and not on me. Oh my God, I was so sorry to the, you know, owner of the marimba.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I didn't know those critics. These critics are coming in who didn't like my playing. My apologies. Wow.
Thank you for the gift. Instead of a flower, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, now I never play outside. This is what happens.
Yeah.
All right, last question, Enrico. One piece of art, it could be music or movies or books or YouTube clips or theater, visual art, poetry, anything has impacted you the most recently?
I think because I'm Japanese too. Last summer when I went back to Japan, like usual schedule, I arrived at night, the next morning I had to teach, right?
Right, sure.
I had a class, but of course, with the jet lag, I woke up, you know, 4 a.m., although I slept 1 a.m. Okay, yeah, I slept.
Sure.
But somehow, I was in Kyoto, so I thought, should I just try to sleep and lie down on the bed? But somehow I'm in Kyoto.
Yeah.
There are things. And because of my schedule, I didn't have so much time, open time to go sightseeing. So I thought, okay, it would be nice time for me to go. I went to temple around the hotel. It's a temple everywhere, huge, beautiful temple everywhere in Kyoto. So I went to temple. There was a bit, tiny bit raining. So there are no people, just me and some one more, two more in a huge temple and quiet. It's hot, but inside of the temple is kind of cool and so much, you know, it's not extravaganza European style of the arts. It's super simple and quiet with the smell of the tatami, which is a Japanese carpet, like Japanese style of carpet made by igusa, which is weed.
Okay.
Smell of that and peaceful, silent, and the Japanese, you know, space. It super touched me at the time. Yeah.
It just happened that you were, because you just never, I guess, expected to be alone in this space, right?
Exactly. Alone myself. And I was traveling by myself too. So it's, you know, entirely alone and peaceful. And I could do meditation in there. And I felt I could wash my emotion and myself inside of there for, you know, just staying in there 30 minutes doing nothing, just meditation, you know. That was super unforgettable moment for me. Yeah.
What a joy it was to talk to Eriko. I wish her the best in all of the things and look forward to meeting her in person in the very near future, and for the best for her and her family. Thanks again, Eriko. This week's rave is the 2024 film and multiple Oscar nominee, A Complete Unknown. The Bob Dylan biopic starring Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan, Monica Barbaro as Joan Baez, Edward Norton as Pete Seeger, Elle Fanning as Sylvie Russo, Boyd Holbrook as Johnny Cash, and many other folks. Written and directed by James Mangold and now showing in theaters. I was glad to finally get the chance to see this, even though I'd heard from folks whose opinions I respect about movies to both enjoy and be wary of this film, for reasons I'll get to. But honestly, I quite enjoyed it. The film is a look at the first 5 years or so of Bob Dylan's public life as a musician, and primarily looks at his foray into the world of folk music, how he made such a strong splash, and then transitioned to the next part of his career after he infamously, quote, went electric at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival. It includes his connections to the scene through Woody Guthrie and then Pete Seeger, connecting both personally and musically with Joan Baez, his brief excursions with Johnny Cash at that time, and his relationship with artist Sylvie Russo. It also gives a sense of the nature and challenge his sudden pop music fame that hit him in these years both alienated him within the folk community, became more than he could deal with, and where that propels him forward. And it does all of this while having Chalamet, Barbaro, Norton, and Holbrook all singing the music of the artists they are portraying in their own voices. Perhaps the biggest takeaway are the excellent musical renditions of the era, which is constant throughout the entire film. All of those musicians truly sound great. I mean, you know, likely not as good as the originals, but you're not expecting that. Still all very good in their own right. Honestly, the storyline is a bit weak because the movie moves so fast from one song to the next that there's hardly a time in the film where someone isn't singing or writing the next song or playing guitar or in the recording studio. But that's about it as a negative. Just not the deepest storytelling you've seen in a film. Across the board, the acting is great, including Elle Fanning as Dylan's main girlfriend early in his career and an artist in her own right. Also good is Holbrook as Johnny Cash. However, the film belongs with the portrayals of Baez, Seeger, and Dylan. Monica Barbaro's version of Joan Baez captures her feistiness and attitude really well and includes wonderful musical performances. Edward Norton, nominated 3 previous times for acting Oscars, I think has his best shot so far at an award because, wow, he really captures the physical being and the spirit of Pete Seeger in some profound ways. He's not only singing and performing on banjo like Seeger, but he dials back the volcanic anger he has in Reservoir and totally does not reach for it in this character and this portrayal. But internally, he is capturing what is going on incredibly well. Although, all that is to say that the movie will not work unless Timothy Chalamet doesn't nail his performance as Bob Dylan. It's been known for a while that Chalamet has been working and perfecting this performance for years, including the guitar playing, the harmonica playing, and the specific Dylan inflection that makes him so vocally unique. And that works quite well as it is. The great performance, though, is the way away from the music that Chalamet is able to channel the cipher-like quality and somewhat inner vacuum that's long been part of Dylan's mystique as a person. There's a way he plays this role where he's able to be the indifferent jerk that he pretty much was and is seen at the time. But, you know, he has an unreal gift that he just has, and it's hard to explain, and he doesn't really want to explain it. And that inhabitants or lack of inhabitants of the role really makes this the best performance of Chalamet's career so far, and it wouldn't be surprising at all if he won Best Actor for this. A very good film, well worth your time, and still playing in theaters, hopefully near you. Check out A Complete Unknown and enjoy. And that's our show. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave a comment and a rating. You can find every episode and the show notes at the homepage at petezambito.com/Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. Show is also on SoundCloud and Spotify and many other podcast locations. If you're on Facebook, like the page Pete's Percussion Podcast, you can find me there on Instagram and X at Pete Zambito or by email at petesperkpod@gmail.com. And I'll catch you next time. Until then.